Are you ready? It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 570 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, I get to talk with Phoebe Xavier of 123 Go Publications. She's the creator of Trouble, a series about retired SOL Corps Marine Tamika, or Trouble Kennedy, and the 13th Moon Anthology series. She also has a book coming out soon called Superliminal Latency, a collection of 17 short stories in the genre of horror, sci-fi, and thriller. We talk about indie comics and creating them, as well as other writings and what she has coming our way soon, as well as what's happening in 123 Go Publications. So be sure to enjoy this fun conversation with an up-and-coming creator. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Phoebe Xavier, who is the co-founder and editor-in-chief of 123 Go Publications. How you doing, Phoebe?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Wayne.
It's good to talk with you. You've got multiple things going on. Why don't we go and hit the hot one first, and then we'll talk about the good old comic stuff. You have a book that is coming that is actually a novel, and it's, as I understand, it's called Superliminal Latency.
Yes, that's correct. It's my first prose book. It is 280 pages about, and it is 17 short stories. And this is the first time I'm publishing in a non-comic book form.
Okay, because that was that a challenge for you? Because, you know, you're more familiar with the comic format to go over to using only words. How did that go?
I started writing stories like 30 years ago, 35 years ago when I was a kid, and not that I had any success with it back then, but so writing prose has always been a part of what I do, and this collection, in fact, is almost 20 years old. It dates back to like 2003, and two of the stories are from that far back, but most of it is written in the 2010s. And when COVID lockdowns happened, I was like, let me put out all my stories before I'm dead. And it's taken me 2 years to get them properly edited. And here we are. I'm very happy to publish my first novel.
Well, congratulations. Are you self-publishing it?
Yes, we are for now. It'll be available through Indie Planet, which is where my comic books are available. IndiePlanet.com/123Go. And you can find my comic books, and hopefully by now you'll be also be able to find this book. We'll also be posting, it's also up on the Kindle, Amazon sort of availabilities as well.
Are you thinking about turning this into a comic anytime?
Okay, so a lot of the characters in this, in the short story collection do overlap into my comic book. So there's a little bit of back and forth. Some of them started in short stories and wound up in the comic book, and the comic books just sort of got published first. And others of them that I've now written about and I'm putting out in prose form, I might bring some of them over to the comic book that haven't been there yet. Yes.
Okay, cool. How long has 123 Go Publications been going?
I would say like in the developmental phase, like 6 years at least. It's been going on maybe 7-8 years ago that the development of some of these projects started, and but I think we've really been picking up steam since like 2019, and as far as having any sort of visibility on the internet and with any sort of fandom, 2019 is about where we pick up.
Okay, if people always get mad at me because I do this last usually. If people want to follow you guys and your stuff online, how do they do that on social media?
I would say my severely underused Instagram, at DB123Go. You can follow me there. And I only have like three posts on that account, but eventually big projects will have some visibility there. Otherwise, we're on Facebook. Come find like the fan page, 123Go Publications fan page. And no serious Twitter presence at the moment. Twitter is kind of turbulent. But I'm looking forward to Spoutable, which is a new social media platform that's being developed as a replacement to Twitter. So you can find us on Spoutable soon, I bet.
Okay, because a lot of people have been going over to Hive.
I have never been on it yet.
Okay, because I sign up on every social media thing I can so I can get the word out to as many people as possible. And I got on Hive, and it just all of a sudden got quiet after a few days reaching out to people. So we'll see how this all goes. There's other stuff around, too, and we'll find out how these things all turn out.
Yeah, Mastodon and Post are two alternates that I see being floated right now as possible good alternatives to Twitter. But I really think we're going to find in the end that Spoutable is the only alternative to Twitter that's actually better than Twitter.
I got to look that up because it only takes me a few minutes when I promote my stuff out there because I want to, like I said, I want everybody I can to get to know it. So I'll look that one up too. So, okay, so let's talk about your comics and get that stuff going. Now, what came first, Trouble Number One or The 13th Moon?
Trouble Number One was released back in, 2019, I think.
Okay, Trouble Number One. Why don't you talk about what that's about?
It's about Tamika Kennedy. She is a former so-called Corps Marine, which is, in the future, in the deep future, where a lot of my stories take place. There's this entity called Soul Corps, and they control the government, they control the military, but also the corporations kind of control them. So it's like the heads of the biggest companies can control the state and the military. But they do it by committee, and they're super evil and super rich. So they still have armies that fight in conflicts, and she's someone who survived through 20 years as a Soul Corps Marine and retired with a little bit of nanotechnology installed into her arms that makes her different than the average soldier. And she has retired to a place on the moon called Straylight Beach. And it is a domed portion of the moon where it's built to recreate a beautiful tropical bay. And her ex-boyfriend is the local sergeant of the Soul Corps police. And when he can't handle things, he calls upon her. And she keeps stepping in to save his ass.
Okay. Now, would it be spoilers to ask what kind of things happens on the stuff on her arms? Do you want to wait till people read it?
No, that's cool. That's absolutely who she is. The nanotech on her arms is, it looks like just kind of like chrome plating when it's in its resting state. And then when she needs to activate it, it like becomes these giant talons that she slices through things with. We have a 13th Moon Volume 2 and 3 are in production right now. And in 13th Moon Volume 3, she fights Cthulhu. And we see that she also has the ability to turn it into other shapes other than that giant talon that she uses for in the combat mode. She kind of does a flying, it's more of a gliding. She does a gliding across the bay in her Trouble vs. Cthulhu story. But yeah, it's primarily meant to be used as a weapon, and that's her only superpower, so to speak. But as it is a cyberpunk future story, future world, she has her brain linked into other people's brains to send messages back and forth.
So how does Cthulhu get involved in all this?
Okay. So, I don't want to spoil too much of that story, but basically there's a bunch of followers of Cthulhu. There's a bunch of followers of Cthulhu on the moon, who believe that the stars are right for Cthulhu to return. And so they do a little bit of a, summoning spell. And then she deals with him erupting out of the bay.
Okay, that'll be fun, because I would think Cthulhu is a little much for her to handle, but
yeah, she's outmatched. She's definitely outmatched in that one. Fortunate for her in that one, one of her best friends is a young hacker who is following other trends in the city while she tries to go one-on-one, fist-to-fist against Cthulhu. So it might come from not direct fisticuffs that problem gets resolved for the good guys.
Okay, so she first appears in Trouble Number One, right?
Sort of. She actually first appeared in Sidereal Apogee Number Five is my the first book I ever put out on 123 Go Publications, and kind of our central flagship title where all these Soul Core stories happen. And she appeared in one or two of those stories in Sidereal Apogee Number Five. And that one actually maybe came out later, but was written before. So yeah, that one might've got published in 2020, whereas Trouble Number One got published in 2019. So the spinoff might've came out before I published her first appearance.
Okay. But you can read Trouble Number One without being confused, right?
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Mm-hmm. It gives you all the baseline details. Oh, it's also, even though it's in the same universe, Trouble has a much different tone than the Sidereal Apogee stories.
Okay, so if people want to get these books, where do they get them? Do they get them at, do you guys have a website or a store or something like where people can get them?
I recently purchased the domain for S123Go Publications, but for now I'm just on Indie Planet and indieplanet.com/123Go. If you go to either Trouble Number One, 13th Moon Volume 1, or Gunmetal Black Ops Number 2, and go to the digital download option, you will find that it's $0.00 because those are free downloads.
Okay, wow. I have to get a look at those because they're really interesting. I'm always interested in female leads in comics because, as people listen to this podcast know, I have read male leads for decades, and I kind of know where male leads are going to go. You know, they tend to do certain things, and when certain things happen, then certain things follow up immediately. But when there are women who are leads, I don't know where that's going to go. And for a longtime comic reader, I enjoy that. So I like with this book, I didn't have any clue what she was going to do. And for me, that was a real pleasure to be able to read that and not have any idea where we'd be going.
Awesome. Yeah. Now, having too much expectation will bog you down, but her story picks up again in issue 2, which we're writing. We have like 12 pages of that written, but she will appear first in 13th Moon Volume 3 in her Trouble versus Cthulhu story. But yeah, the 13th Moon book is more of a horror anthology, Halloween based horror anthology. And that one is one that I'm more the main editor and letterer for. And we have two more of them coming at you into 2023.
Okay, great. Okay. You're not only the writer and editor, you're the letterer. Is that helpful to be the letterer as well?
I mean, as someone coming with doing this all indie DIY, that was something that I had to do early just to make sure that I could put any of these stories together. I could only afford so much for an artist. And I wasn't even publishing in color. I was like mostly black and white. That I can pay for black and white pages and do the letters myself, and maybe I can make a comic book. So that was necessity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that makes sense. Now, the Trouble book that I read, there's color all the way to it. So that is that. How's this going to work? I mean, is Trouble going to be color when she shows up, or is that only going to be like in like the Trouble books herself?
Okay. So if you see her appearance in Sidereal Apogee Number 5, that's black and white. But Trouble Number 2 will be in color, and Trouble versus Cthulhu in 13th Moon Volume 3 will also be in color. I have some preview pages of that. I think actually. No, maybe I don't. I will throw up on the Instagram tonight. I will throw up a preview of the Trouble versus Cthulhu story.
Okay, that'll be good because that's kind of interesting. Cthulhu seems to be having something of a popular phase going on right now. A lot of people seem to be doing a lot of Cthulhu books. So I'm curious to see, because her up against Cthulhu is going to be quite the challenge. That's going to be something to see how she handles that. So it's going to be good. Now, she's a woman of color, which is something that I found really interesting. Was there a reason why you went that route with her?
Actually, in the books, she looks, I think, a little bit more, I don't know, anime black, like what a black person looks like in a manga book.
Okay.
But in the design phase, if I were to show you the original JPEGs of what inspiration for her face I sent to my artist, she was like mostly Native American, actually.
Huh.
Schwenchen is a genius, the artist who draws the book. Schwenchen is incredible, and he does do a manga/anime style that, like, at a professional level that a lot of people, like, wish they could draw as good as Schwenchen. And I'm blessed to be. But yeah, he. I don't think anime allows for a lot of the translation of those features, maybe without like gross stereotypical racism being involved.
Okay.
So I think that his version of what I had at the design phase became more of a something between a black person and a Latino person, which okay. is fine. But in the but she is meant to be a person of color, a minority, and specifically with a predominant Native American genealogy. And in 2400, where these stories take place, most people have become this more homogenized mix of like white European and like average Asian Chinese, and like that is the average of the population of the universe of the solar system is mostly that in my fiction in that point, and that where Soul Core controls everything. And it was meant to be like that she was sort of unique for how much of her lineage came directly from Native American genealogy.
Okay, cool. Because her last name is Kennedy, which is an interesting choice.
Yeah, I mean, last names get changed real quick when someone marries this other person with a name, but like you're still bringing 50% of this, background with it. Even the name that gets erased doesn't erase like the DNA that comes with it.
Okay, all righty. So she is. Let's see. She's 20 years in the military. How old is she when we see her in Trouble Number One?
She's 40.
40 years old. She's in good shape for a 40-year-old.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. In the future, if you can afford it, you can look like you're 20 forever.
Okay. Now, what's her hair? I mean, you were talking about her hair a little bit. What's the situation with her hair? Is that a style that they have in the future?
She has, like, dreadlocks, but she just has the color faded through it, like, in blocks of blonde and pink and purple, I think.
Okay, all righty, because I still haven't gotten used to people wearing different colors in their hair. I went to a store and I saw somebody with blue and purple in their hair, and I looked at it and I felt like saying, oh, I'm so sorry they did that to you, but I thought, oops, that's what he wanted. So I better not say anything like that. So so it's pretty good to do that.
I've been dyeing my hair for 30 years.
Oh, wow. What color do you dye it?
In various different colors.
Oh, so it just depends on your mood?
No, not entirely. I had a friend dye it recently, and I didn't like the color she put in, so I changed it.
I knew a lady I worked with once, and she was trying to get her hair to be blonde. She was very brown. But the lady, when she colored it, made it more green. And nobody would tell her, and I was working with her, and I looked over, I said, why did you want your hair green? And she says, it's not supposed to be green. It's supposed to be blonde. I hate to tell you this, but it's green.
That happened to me. My hair, now, not that I got over blonded, which is a thing that happened to that woman, but now my friend dyed my hair green, but fortunately purple dyes over green, and now I'm to a very, very dark Wednesday Addams looking shade.
Okay, that's interesting. It's kind of fun to do, I guess. I'm kind of curious because, like, with for example, Star Trek: Strange New Worlds, the captain, his hair kind of puffs up, and a lot of people are just like that. Man, people aren't going to wear their hair like that in the future. And I thought, how do you know that? Because his hair could be all that puffy up there, just the way it is, and that may be a future style. But people are still mad about that.
What's a Wolverine doing that in the late 70s, early 80s, though?
Yeah. So there's all kinds of wonderful stuff going on. Who knows what we're going to do in the future. But so I in the beginning in Trouble Number One, she kind of she's got a somebody who's working who's helping her and kind of a robot. Well, he's got his name Bob sketched on his forehead.
Yeah, that was Xuanxun's artistic initiative. There, he did that without me asking him to make that character look like that or have that on his face.
Okay. Now she runs into a guy who is who's trying to steal stuff from a guy. He's got like a cod piece on. And what's his name?
Jagger, I think.
Yeah, I think Jagger is the name. And he's got a gun that he's shooting around. And the Sol Corp come in, the hover police. And I get a kick when Jagger tries to run. He runs like a cartoon run. The legs are in a circle trying to, you know, run away in a hurry kind of stuff. I got a kick out of that. But
Wile E. Coyote versus the Roadrunner. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's doing that. And they kind of run around. Then, of course, she has to stop him because the Sol Corps are not the most skilled at what they do. So she tries to get him. And then she actually does some stuff that got me. She kind of tries to paralyze his arms.
Yeah, she she disables his shoulders for at least temporarily. But they live in a world where that it would be easy to repair that. But yeah, she's like, I'm sick of your shit. And
yeah. Okay, so that's really interesting how that's because we're shy to do that today. But I guess if it was much easier to repair, I guess people wouldn't be so shy about doing those kinds of things in the future.
I think she also has carte blanche because of how much her boyfriend depends on her to get shit done, or her ex-boyfriend depends on her to get shit done.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's kind of wild. So yeah, that's a whole different way of doing things. See, that's sometimes I get a little frustrated with futuristic storytelling, and even history storytelling, where they impose today's standards on those things. So I'm happy to hear that the things in the future may not be exactly the way we expect them to be today. So that sounds like a great idea.
I'm glad that you think that. I'm mostly just telling the story that I want to read, that I'm excited to have Tamika live through.
Okay. She's got beta bots involved. I don't want to spoil too much of the story because I want people to be able to read them. And she runs into a green, looks like a robot of sorts.
The cyber girl, yeah.
Yeah, and she runs into that. And let's just say that may be more than she can handle at the moment, at least the way it looks like in the book. But, of course, we'll wait for issue number two to find out all that good stuff. So.
Yeah, we're already writing it.
I'm sorry, what?
We're already writing it, half done.
Oh, great. So issue two. So when did you say issue two might be coming out?
I don't know that we'll finish that in 2023. We'll be trying to, but more important for us right now is to get out 13th Moon Volume 2 and 3 early next year.
Okay, well, that's a perfect segue into the other book. Let's talk about 13th Moon now, because we know what Trouble's all about. 13th Moon is much more of a shorter story setup, isn't it? There's 55 pages in the volume that you made available to me. The first one is Mirror the Time. Lucy and the Doombringers is in there, but you did the narration and in Mirror the Time Bender. Is that the initial story?
Mirror the Time Bender is like our bookends. He is our narrator, like a la the Crypt Keeper or other horror stories, horror anthologies where someone does the intro outro. And the stories are self-standing stories for the most part, although volume 2 and 3 have one story that is continued from one to the next. But they're horror stories. There's some of them are comedy horror. Some of them are more graphic horror. There's a sci-fi horror that I wrote. And Yeah, that is, and Mirror is like this gigantic or shape-shifting, multi-dimensional raccoon-type being with eight-pointed stars around his eyes instead of concentric rings.
Okay, where'd that concept come from?
What's that?
Where'd that concept come from?
He is actually a character that some people might notice was low-key Easter egg inside Superliminal Latency. He appears in one of those stories there. And that was a story that I wrote in 2003. So he's been in my mind latently for a while. And I think there are a couple other stories that I wrote where he was gonna be in. He's in the stories the way they're written, but they're just not stories I'm necessarily publishing at the moment or putting in any of these collections. But yeah, that's just a creature I've had in my brain for a long time. And I would say he's kind of true neutral as far as like Dungeons and Dragons alignment definitions, but he's also an explorer of multi-dimensional space. And so he goes and he finds these cool, weird things that have happened and maybe sometimes takes part in them. But then he brings them to us, the audience, to consume them and tells us the story.
Okay, so you're the editor and the letterer in Lucy and the Doombringers, which is the first full story in there, right?
Yes.
Okay, so
that was drawn by Bayron Calderon, and he is a brilliant, brilliant artist that I know from New Jersey.
Okay, and are these stories are they complete stories? Are they going to continue from volume to volume? Are some of them a little bit of each? How does that work?
A lot of our books so far are anthologies. So some of the characters are recurring, some of them are not. So it's a space where we can tell one-off stories, but we like to also follow up on any character that we like and find that our friends and fans like.
Okay, because Lucy and the Doombringers is one of the longer stories in this first volume, which I was looking at it. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that story is about? Because it's interesting.
Yeah, no worries. So that's about like Satan's daughter, essentially, or Lucifer's daughter, some cartoonish version of the devil's daughter, is into punk rock heavy metal music, but he's kept her grounded for like a million years. So she lives in the equivalent of like her lower hell prison. And then she finds a way to break out. And she comes to Earth and has some misadventures with a metal band who summon her, essentially, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, very fun story. It's comedic. It's also demonic, and it's like horror, but lighthearted. And yeah, that one was a lot of fun to be a part of. Bayron had a earlier concept of like a house that would be that girl and like two other witchy and or vampire girls and like a whole spooky like Buffy thing going on or something. And but when he did that work, I think during COVID lockdown as well, that it was like, hey, since he can't go out a lot, he had a lot of time to work on comic books all day. So I was very lucky to have been in communication with Bayron to work that story out when we did.
It's cool because the group that they end up singing, let's just say the name of the group ends up being something that the readers will be familiar with. So that's pretty good. So that one is the first story we run into. The second one is called Patient Zero. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Patient Zero was a one-page thing that Philip Charles did. And that's the first. He also did the one-way ticket story. And it was later into the process that he asked if he could add like a one-page thing in, and I read it and it sounded good. So yeah, that's what. Oh, and that's by JMA. As far as who drew that one, the inks are by Juan Manuel Almiron, my friend from South America, who does all the work on Moloch, all the ink line art on Moloch, in a lot of the work on some of our other stuff. For example, he does all the Mirror pages. We were talking about Mirror, the Time Bender, the raccoon thing. He does all those pages. And he's done a few stories for Sidereal Apogee. And yeah, Juan is brilliant. JMA. JMA is a beast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sorry. And yeah, so that's that. That was that story. JMA smashed that.
Okay, the next one is called Inexorable. And that one's a longer story. Christina, the length seems to vary from story to story, which is good. What's Inexorable about?
It is a person who is about to get, like, assassinated by his upper-up bosses in the mafia, the Russian mafia that he's involved in. And then while they're doing that, a zombie attack sort of occurs. The world breaks out into zombie apocalypse. And it's... yeah, it's like two or three twists along the way of a dude who's just destined to die.
Okay, cool. Now, the story after that, now we won't necessarily go through all of them, but this story is a really interesting one. It's called Dracula, Lord of the Future, which I haven't seen much. I haven't seen Dracula in the future very much. Do you want to talk about that one?
That is very close to ground zero of the birth of the Strokerverse, a Strokerverse, which is now happening with Chris McCauley, who wrote that story, and Doc Ray Stoker, the current person who holds the estate of the original Dracula stories. That story is technically canon, and Chris works tightly with Doc Ray these days, and or Docker, I don't know how to say his name. I've never met the guy, but they have an amazing thing going on with, like, role-playing games and several novels now in the Stokerverse that they're co-creating.
Oh, and it's going to be set in the future?
No. That story, though, is still canon, but that's the only one set in the future.
Okay, that'll be interesting. Is that story going to continue? Because let's just say it ends in a way that makes me think there's going to be more stories of Dracula in the future.
We would hope. But we don't know yet. I don't have any active projects, any active work on that. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Well, that I'd like to see more of, to be honest with you. That would be interesting. But anyway, so the next one is called One Way Ticket. And that's another one of the shorter stories. Talk a little bit about that one, if you would.
I think that's 8 pages. And it is about a demon who's trying to find a way to get out of hell, kind of. And he's going to use the innocence of a human to do it. And the subway departs from New York City and winds up in hell. And yeah, kind of once the doors close and someone snaps their fingers and everything goes all super demon. And, that one is super fun. That is also the introduction of, okay, so I mentioned once or twice Moloch. Moloch is one of our other books about a fallen angel who has killed Lucifer and is gathering the armies of hell under his command so he can attack God. And in the One Way Ticket story, we introduce the seven sins, like from Milton or whatever. And of the seven sins, we've used like two or three of them in the book of Moloch, like from that story, the One Way Ticket story being their introduction. We've also brought them over into the Moloch continuity. So that one is like part of that continuity, part of that universe. Even if it's separate from all the Sidereal Apogee stuff, those are two different timelines or spaces. But some of our scarier or more demonic shit is tied into a universe.
Okay, and then there's The Damned after that.
That's a werewolf story, and it has a pretty cool twist at the end. I work with, I don't remember the artist's names at the moment, but I remember they are friends from South America.
Cool, and then we get to a little computer play. It's ESC Pod, which of course is Escape Pod. And we're going from werewolves back into outer space. Do you want to talk about what that's all about?
That one is a story that I wrote, and it is I had it sort of written down as an elevator pitch, a paragraph written of it or whatever, And at some point, I was trying to pitch a 4-page story to someone else's anthology. And so I wrote it and paid for it to be drawn and submitted it to their project. And they were like, no thanks. And got it back and put it in 13th Moon Volume 1 instead.
Okay, very cool. And then there's some pinups and a list of supports. So this was all Kickstartered.
Yes, that one was launched on Kickstarter.
Okay. Are other books going to be done on Kickstarter as well?
Yeah, we have at least one in 2023 coming up called Vikings Saga of the North. And you can find that on IG at Vikings_Saga_of_the_etc. Vikings Saga of the North.
Okay.
And that is a historical recounting of the Age of the Vikings.
Okay. How does it compare like to the TV show, the Vikings?
I would say less like large scale combat, like less of those awesome scenes that are like almost like something out of Braveheart. We don't have a lot of that. We have a little bit of that, but a lot of it is more about teaching what they ate and did at those times and what defined their lives and lifestyles. And I know that being a Viking was more of like a social class of being a raider, but nonetheless, we touch on what was culturally Scandinavian at that time and what their impact on Europe and all of the northern world at that time.
Well, that's good, because I think that a lot of that got lost in that TV show. I don't think we got nearly enough of that on that show, although I liked the show a lot.
Yeah, I did too. No, the show was great. I watched the follow-up one, the Valhalla one, that happens like 100 years later with Eric the Red's kid or something.
Okay. All right. So those are what's coming. Now, of course, when this comes out again, what book is going to be out that people need to be looking for again?
Superliminal Latency. Right. Superliminal Latency is a 17 short story collection that I hope you'll go find right now.
Okay. That'll be good. If something good to read, a little change up. To do something that's a little more novel-esque. As far as comics go, after that book is done, what other comics are going to be coming next?
So we do have a sequel to The Vikings, or at least I'm still working with the artist from that Vikings book. We're changing tones, and we're doing going from the historical to the fictional, and we're telling a story called Vikings, the Northern Passage. And that story will feature Yule Cat, the mythical cat from Iceland that eats you if you don't have new clothes on Christmas, as one of the characters. And it's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay, great, great. Sounds like a lot of good and creative stuff going on. I'm trying to think, do you ever go to conventions and stuff, or are you still basically kind of avoiding all that?
I'm trying to go to New York Comic Con next year.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's the one I always recommend to people because that's my favorite.
I'm trying to table there, yeah.
Okay, if you can get into the Artist Alley, let me tell you, that's a good place to go. I've been in there, and there are certain books we never sold out of. We sold out there, so I would recommend it. That's great.
Trying to be there.
Good, good. Well, good luck for that. I hope it happens, because I wish they could make that place bigger, because I don't think they could have near enough people in there, even though it's already sometimes more than I can handle. I'd still like to see more.
I've never been there, so I'm like really anxious. It would actually be my first con, period. And yeah, because I was trying to get into that sort of mode when COVID first broke out. And I've had a few near misses on which conventions I was trying to do in the last year or two. But now sitting up here in Vermont where I am, that seems doable. So I'm trying to do it.
Okay. You might try some smaller cons before you do that. New York is a big con. It's comparable to San Diego as far as size and stuff goes. So you might want to try a little... I don't know, like a comic shop. They'll do a signing and do some stuff so you get your pattern up to do it, because New York's big.
I'm already in my own mind, Wayne. I'm okay with, like, yeah, I can handle New York. I've been going to New York for 40 years, or 40, more than 40 years, since I was 2 years old.
Okay, well, good for you. That'll be a great place to hit the ground running, boy, because I guarantee it's you're going to meet a lot of really great people there. Of course, I always suggest people talk to your to the people who are at booths near you, so because sometimes you make great connections that way. And
sure.
I hope I get to see. I tend to go there every year, so hopefully I'll bump into you while I'm there. Because I love to go around. What I sometimes do is help certain people that I know. And then what I often end up doing is every once in a while I get unleashed and I walk around the floor and try to run into people and see if I recognize and do people. So I hope you get to do the same, because that's really a great place to make connections and stuff. So I'd love to see your stuff and making lots of good people there for you. So that would be great for you. Do you guys have banners and stuff? Are you going to work on that to have those there?
Like a printed banner? Yeah. I have thought about the backdrop of just a certain logo that I have at the moment. But I'm working with one of our artists who's done a few of our logos on redesigning my 1-3 logo in general. So, no, I have nothing big printed at the moment. But I'm also thinking about what I'm really trying to do is find someone to cosplay as one of the characters that I've written into the comics and Superliminal Latency. So that is also something in play that I hope to bring to the table.
Well, hopefully you'll have some flyers and stuff like that to be able to give to people. So if you've got a Kickstarter going on around that time, that could really help support that. That kind of stuff is always good. The reason I talk about banners is because I was involved with a comic called Stabbity Bunny. And the banner that we had, we could see people aisles away looking over and seeing it. You could see the mouth of the word, Stabbity Bunny, Stabbity Bunny. And they would work their way to our aisle and they would say, "We saw your banner a couple of aisles ago and we just couldn't wait to find out what this book was about." And so a banner can help you a lot, especially getting attention, is why I bring it up. I would suggest, you know, if you get a chance to do something really good, do that. And of course, 1-2-3-go is a good phrase, so that would be a good way to get people's attention too. So that would be great.
Yeah, trying to get people motivated. 1-2-3-go. Let's do this.
Okay, well, I think maybe you're off to a great start. You got good things coming and great things coming down the road. Do you guys have a website, or do you stick to Facebook?
I'm working on my Wix shit. I'm inside my Wix right now. I already bought the domain, but no, don't go to 123gopublications.com yet. For now, go to @Phoebe123go on Insta or 123gopublications on Facebook.
Well, it sounds like you got a lot of great stuff, and you're off to a great start. So I wish you nothing but even better success as time goes along in 2023. And, you know, good luck with all the best, Phoebe. I just can't wait to see what you're going to do in the coming months ahead.
Thank you, Wayne. Thank you for having me on.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. From flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for another episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be back next week, but until then, keep reading your comics.